are tuned to the coffee table on KBBI AM 890, Homer, the Alaska Budget Breakdown. This morning in the studio, Kenai Peninsula Borough President Kelly Cooper. Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And let's see if it's true. On the phone, Representative Paul Seaton. Do you read me?
Hello.
Hello. So nice to talk to you.
Yeah, hey, glad to join you this morning.
Kelly Cooper, I suspect you've been watching pretty closely. You are looking at revenue sharing, at what's going to be coming out, also the base student allocation. Does it inform the base student allocation for the borough, or does it set it?
The state's budgeting determines the formula for the maximum amount that we can contribute, and so what the state budget does with their education funding does impact the maximum amount that we can budget for our local schools, as well as revenue sharing. You know, that continues to go down, and we're expecting about $1 million in revenue sharing for this coming year, and that continues to drop, as well as debt reimbursement. As we're expecting a $2.6 million debt reimbursement, which means about 10% reduction in total revenues from the state, which creates that cost shifting for us.
Well, I am going to ask you a little more about how you shift in that environment, but I want to let any listeners know that if you would like to take a look at the House Finance Operating Budget and the Senate Operating Budget, they are on our Facebook page. You can go take a look at them and follow along if you like. Also, we will be opening up the phones a little bit early, but not quite yet, because I know there are a lot of people out there with questions, so I want to make sure everybody gets a chance. Representative Seaton, the House has a budget, the Senate has a budget, the governor has a budget, and they all have to be reconciled. Your office said over some changes that had been made since the budget I have in my hands went around. Can you tell me where we are? How close are we to reconciling all three budgets into one?
Well, the governor's budget is the proposed budget, and that formed the base of our budget. So we added little bit of money, $1.2 million, I think it was, for maintaining some early childhood education in the 20 villages that were part of the Kasaili suit, and so maintaining those for another year, that's preschool. And then we fully funded the pupil transportation, which is part of the K-12 formula, which the governor didn't have. So our budget basically took the governor's budget. You know, they had had every department go through and make whatever cuts, wherever they could squeeze a little money out of, and we thought that they had done a really good job there. So we're fully funding the K-12 education budget. And in fact, we're forward funding it in our budget. We put the money in the public education fund so that the school districts would know that that was funded. But the Senate has not done that. The Senate has, talked about a 5% base student allocation reduction, basically about $70 million worth of education reductions. We're not at the point of having solved those yet. So remember, the governor can only cut money from the budget with a veto. He can't add money to the budget. So really, we're in a state of looking at the House and the Senate negotiating all the budget items.
There's some changes I'm going to find. I have so much paper in front of me right now. I was hoping to talk a little bit about senior housing development. There's a change. The governor proposed senior citizen housing development programs, and I don't see that in the House finance bill.
Well, you have a capital budget and you have a operating budget,
right.
And the Senate historically does the capital budget and then sends it over to us. Now, they're having it heard on the Senate floor today, so we don't have a capital budget yet.
So that's happening right now or later today?
That's correct.
And I am going to open up the phones now. If anyone has questions on the budget, the numbers to call, 235-7721 and toll-free 1-800-979-5224. Representative Seaton can take your questions. Also, Borough President Kelly Cooper can take your questions.
And on the one thing that you talked about, the senior citizen housing development, there was a fund source switch there in the Senate's bill that they have on the floor today. So unless they make a floor amendment, that money is the same there as it in the governor's budget. It just comes, you know, it's just a allocation from a different pot of money. That $1 million is still there.
I do want to move to how we get this budget balanced, how the fiscal plan works. You have bills. I have a four-pillar plan chart in front of me. And I want to talk about the economic and development four-pillar plan that the House is putting forward. Can you line it out for people?
Sure. We looked at the four things. One was basically SB 26, which was proposed by the governor previously as the Permanent Fund Protection Act, which restructures the use of some of the earnings from the earnings reserve of the permanent fund, a percent of market value payout, and ours is very similar with the Senate on that. And then maintaining and protecting the PFD, the Senate has only $1,000 in the PFD, and we have $1,250 is what we're trying to do. But then the other two pillars of our plan are, one, we need some form of broad-based revenue, because going into having a budget that always has a deficit, a structural deficit, means that you're always going to be in this cycle of trying to cut and cut and cut, and we're at the point now where cuts don't make much sense, because all you're doing is making the delivery of those services inefficient, because you have a desk and nobody sitting at it to answer the phone, kind of thing. The fourth pillar is this smart budget cuts, and the majority of that has to come from oil and gas taxes and oil and gas subsidies in the form of those credits, whether it's cashable credits or whether it's credits that are written off against oil companies' liability. So those four things, getting rid of some of those subsidies to oil companies, getting some broad-based revenue. I mean, you know, we're the only state in the nation that does not pay any taxes to the state government for all the services that are provided, either a sales tax or an income tax or a state property tax. So none of those are paid to the state now. Those are the things we have to do to get about a budget that will go forward that can support the services that, you know, all my constituents tell me that they really want to see roads maintained, and they want to see, you know, trooper posts, and they want to see the court system working instead of being laid off for a day or two each week. So anyway, that's the four-pillar plan. We want to have a strong economy and have jobs. But the jobs, again, have to generate some income to the state so it can make sense for economic development.
The institution of taxes, state taxes, that's the major difference between House and Senate, would you say?
Yeah, the two major differences are a broad-based tax, and also the reduction of tax credits and some oil tax reform that gets us some revenue at these intermediate price ranges.
When the Senate is done with this, do they send it back to you, or does it then go straight to the governor?
If the bill that we pass and the bill that they pass are not identical, then it goes to a conference committee, and we both have to work out the differences, and then both houses have to vote on it and agree before it goes to the governor for a signature.
You're getting pretty close to the end of your session.
Well, we are, and that's next Wednesday, and with a two-thirds vote of each body, we can extend under the Constitution for an additional 10 days. If we don't have the two-thirds vote of each body to do that, the governor can call us back into special session. And at that point in time, the only issues we would be dealing with are the issues that he puts on the call for the special session. We're fully convinced that the governor is not going to be satisfied to let us walk out of here. Well, we can't walk out of here without a budget, and the budget is all being held up by trying to get an agreement on a fiscal plan to fund the budget.
I want to spend a little time with Kelly Cooper now. Take a breath, Representative Seaton.
Okay.
Thank you. You just started on the borough budget. How much, other than base student allocation and the revenue sharing, how much of what you're deciding depends on the state other than those two things?
Well, we have, with the debt reimbursement, you know, that changes how we look at capital projects and our overall budget. The base student allocation changes our formula on what we can provide to the school districts. So that is a very large amount. I'm really pleased to see that they're doing some forward funding, because the school district typically every year sits there trying to figure out what their funding is going to be, as they're needing to offer contracts to teachers that don't have tenure. We also, the revenue sharing is really large for our small unincorporated areas, and I'm pleased that the legislature has worked to keep that going, but it continues to decrease, and we're being told that it could be completely zeroed out by 2019, I believe. So that would hurt a lot of our little small unincorporated areas. So we have a lot to do as far as the budget. We just introduced the budget at our last assembly meeting, and there was one minor amendment proposed, which was flat funding for the schools from last year, which is extremely difficult and a hardship for the school district.
How so?
Well, they have increased costs, and so much of their staffing formulas are mandated by federal requirements. So at the end of this school year, there were 30 positions that needed to be filled, and these are not new positions, these are replacement positions, etc. So if we go to flat funding, the school district has worked very hard to cut, and if we go for flat funding from last year, we will have to actually make some pretty significant changes. You know, as you know, they've changed their transportation to bring those cuts down in the Southern Peninsula area with the way they operated the school bus routes. So they've got those areas that they're going to be working on very hard. We'll have a public hearing on the 16th of May, the first public hearing, and then we'll have another public hearing and finalizing of the budget on June 6th.
All right. If anyone has any questions on the budgets for the borough, call 235-7721 or toll free 1-800-979-5224. Kelly Cooper is ready to engage. I think both Representative Seaton and you can address this about capital projects for this area.
I'm going to let Representative Seaton take the lead on that. Paul has worked very closely with us, understanding how their capital projects affect the borough, but so much of what we do is based on their decisions. So it's all yours, Representative Seaton.
Okay, well, thanks. You know, I mean, there are some stark disagreements on the capital budget. I mean, the first one is that the Senate, if they continue, that should be on the floor in about an hour and a half or two today. And if they continue with that, they put $288 million from totally wiping out our statutory budget reserve and putting that all to pay oil and gas tax credits. So we have a capital budget of just about $100 million, and they're wanting to put triple that amount in to pay oil and gas tax credits. And so we're going to have a huge fight between the House and the Senate over that, because we're not going to accept that. And, you know, they're putting a little bit of money into maintenance, of which about $5 million would go to deferred maintenance for the university. Again, when you look at $1 billion of deferred maintenance at the university and having $5 million there and about $700 or $800 million of tax credits hanging out there that we're not required to pay, and the Senate wanting to put $288 million payment to that, we believe their emphasis is not in the right place, let me say it that way. But we do have, you know, a number of other things. The Tustamina is still in there with the funds to, you know, for replacement. There's some, we talked
so
about
I'm
the
looking
senior
at,
house.
So I'm looking at $220 million federal, $220 million dedicated from the general fund for vessel
right.
replacement.
You know, this is a replacement of the Tustamina, so that's a long-term project. So anyway, you know, there's a number of other things in there that we can talk about, but it's, you know, there's that purchase of the land in Kachemak Bay with the Exxon Valdez oil spill money. You know, that's at Chinook and some barrier islands and stuff, but that's
adjacent to the state park, right?
Right. Uh-huh. Yep. Trying. There's a number of areas around the state where there's small land holdings that they can purchase or that they can add some land to that to make it a unit that works better. So, and of course, that's willing buyers and willing sellers. That's not doing an eminent domain. There's community block grants and Code Blue project. One thing is the Municipal Harbor Grant Fund is still there with $5 million. There's a little change in the fund source, but it's all stays there, as well as the $30 million that would go for the community assistance program, or revenue sharing, as we used to call it. But there's no new money to go into that would be spent out this year. But there's no new appropriation into the community revenue sharing.
And the other thing that I was looking at on the House Finance Operating Budget that your office sent is a floor amendment passed, transfer an additional $47 million to the Public Education Fund through the canceling of the UMED and Susitna-Watonna hydroelectric projects.
Sure. Well, there was a project up in Anchorage that all of the community councils in the area didn't want, that was doing a road, and that's been a subject of a lot of back and forth for about 6 years, and the people that were in favor of that wanted to transfer the money to the university and then back to Anchorage, and the mayor in Anchorage didn't want the project as well. And so anyway, what it did is it reappropriated that money for this other purpose. So it's reappropriations from previous projects that aren't going forward, and there was some money left in those funds, so it's rechanneling that money.
And the other thing I saw on both budgets is I'm dying to know what your per diem is, because the House is proposing to cut their per diem by 75%, and the Senate keeps it the same. What is your sweet per diem at the Capitol?
You mean how much is it?
Yeah, what do you get?
I think it's 213 or 221, something like that, per day.
221 a day.
Yeah.
Okay. And that and the House has cut that.
Well, the House proposed cutting it. It's an interesting thing, because if you can't get agreement, what it'll do, it'll go back to the Legislative Council, which handles that and actually has specific authority for doing that. So I think what's going to happen in the end is that, you know, the House and Senate versions were so different that I believe it'll go back to Ledge Council to actually look into it and make decisions on what makes sense. That's in the budget items, but those haven't been negotiated yet.
Gotcha. So it's time to take a short breather from the coffee table. The time is 9:30 a.m. When we get back, I have a list of services and centers and trooper posts that have been cut in the last few years, and I want to talk about what's left to cut. So we're going to take a short break. On the line is Representative Paul Seaton, and in the studio, Borough President Kelly Cooper. And welcome back to the coffee table here on KBBI AM 890 and KBBI.org. In the studio is Kenai Peninsula Borough President Kelly Cooper, and on the phone is Representative Paul Seaton. Welcome back, guys. Thanks so much for being here. I want everyone to know that if they have any questions or comments, call 235-7721 or toll free 1-800-979-5224. I'm going to start with Kelly Cooper, because the last time I spoke to someone from the school board, they told me that, you know, they felt like every time they met, their entire goal was to find something else to cut from the budget. And so I want to know about the borough's experience for what is there to cut, and also, do you have revenue generating plans?
So as far as the school district, we did have a joint meeting between the assembly and the school district board on their budget. And, you know, they have cut where they can in transportation. They provided us with their staffing formulas. And when we start looking at additional cuts to the school district, you know, really you have to start looking at programs that may have to be eliminated, or increasing the student teacher ratio. But just remember that if we have large groups of high-need students in our schools, we are mandated at a federal level on what that ratio has to be. So the increase of those high-need students has created the school district budget to increase exponentially, and we can't change those staffing formulas. So they're doing what they can there, and I'm sure that they can speak to that better than I do. I do follow them closely and speak with their board members as often as I can. Regarding the borough's revenue, the proposed budget that the mayor brought to the assembly does increase the mill rate from 4.5 to 5%. We have an 8 mill cap on the mill rate that was created many years ago, and we've been at a 4.5 for many years. I do not support increasing that mill rate this year to 5. You know, the Southern Peninsula had that pretty large increase in their property tax assessments. Borough-wide, the increase wasn't nearly very much. It was like 3% or 5%, I can't remember. We did have significant increases in people's household budgets on their property tax assessments going up. So at the 5% mill rate that the mayor has proposed, we will be dipping into our fund balance next year by about $780,000. If we do not increase that mill rate, it would reduce revenues by approximately $3.2 million. So we would be dipping into our fund balance a little more. And, you know, we have these policies on our fund balance, the maximum we can keep in there and the minimum. And currently, we are right about in the upper half of our fund balance, but we don't want to end up in the position that the state is now, where we continue to spend that fund balance down and say, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Last year, we tried to put some things on the ballot that would have helped with our revenues, which would have put a cap on the senior tax exemption. We wanted the ones that had it to continue to keep it, but we wanted to make some adjustments in the forward years. We also tried to raise the sales tax cap from 500 to 1,000, which would have been, you know, a help to our revenues. All of those items were voted down. And so we may relook at that. I know that there's some interest. I see that Assemblyman Bagley has brought an amendment in to change the period of time for the exemption on tax on non-prepared foods, bringing it from 6 months to 3 months. I don't agree with that. That's a petition initiative. They have spoke loudly and clearly, and I don't know that bringing it from 6 to 3 months is a good idea, because I really think it's important that we listen to our constituents. So for us, if we can't get some minor things changed, maybe some things on the ballot for next year, we're going to have to look at reducing our budget as well. And our constituents will have to let us know which they want, if they want the services reduced, or if they're willing to increase that sales tax cap, or maybe reduce the senior exemption a little bit so we can continue to budget at the level we are.
And if you have any suggestions, I'm sure you're ready to write them down.
I am very ready.
235-7721 or 1-800-979-5224. And Representative Seaton, I'm looking at a list of, let's see, 9 trooper posts that have been closed in the last few years.
Right.
6 public health centers, transportation maintenance stations, 5 of them, job centers, visitor centers all across the state, the Ketchikan Regional Youth Facility, the Palmer Correctional Center. One thing I was looking at in the operating budget is plans for programs that can to try and fund themselves, like the DMV.
Well, the DMV does fund itself. It actually makes a little bit of money, and that comes back to the deposit in the general fund. So that's there. You know, there's additional cuts are being proposed in the Senate budget, like the public health clinic there in Kenai would be closed, and the public assistance office in Homer would close, along with Kodiak and Kotzebue. So there's a number of other cuts that are being looked at in the Senate. We think we're right-sized government, and so we're trying to lower some of the indirect expenditures. You know, in our budget process, our subcommittees looked at a number of those, where indirect expenditures are things where we don't charge enough fees to actually pay for the permits or pay for what's going, or we're giving exemptions for people to ride the ferry, or reduce fees, those kind of, and those are called indirect expenditures. So we're looking at spinning down and changing a lot of those so that we actually collect the revenue to support the service. But there's a big difference between the House and the Senate bill. The Senate bill is talking about cutting $185 million, even though a good chunk of that isn't changing the program, so the administration is actually required to provide the services. So then this next session, we'd come back and we'd get a supplemental to pay for what they were required, the services they were required to do, but the Senate underfunds those at this point in the time, so it looks like a cut where it's not really a cut. So anyway, but $100 million of cuts across the state is, you know, that's super posts, that's, you know, more from the courts, that's more from everything. You saw the Pioneer Home closure. That's just because they were allocating these cuts among Hess, and they just went down the line and said, okay, well, you know, let's just take $5.7 million from here and take another amount from here. And some of those were not very well thought out, I would say. And so they retracted from closing the Pioneer Home one because there was enough static on it. But I think that, you know, we're not inclined to accept those large cuts to education, university, and health and social services. I mean, it actually ends up costing us more in the end, because if you don't take care of things on the front end, it's more expensive service that you are going to be providing later. So that's kind of the difference where we're at in our discussions with between the House and the Senate.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit more about that, but there is a caller on the line. Vivian, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Good morning, and I'd like to thank everyone right now about the hard work you're doing, and Representative Seaton, I think you're doing a fabulous job. I live over in Soldovia, by the way. My question is, how do we communicate the importance of what the House bill, which I think is great, it's actually hitting all fronts, how do we communicate that to the constituents in Alaska who do not want to pay for their services? And I guess that's my quandary. I've lived here 43 years. It's kind of like a free state. How do we communicate we cannot continue to be a free state? We get a lot of services, we get a lot of bennies without paying for them. And I think, like, I've been writing in and saying to representatives and senators, look, sometimes you have to make the hard choice, and that is your constituents want to live without having to pay very much. And that's, I understand that, but we cannot continue in that front. How do we communicate to all of those out there when I get senators responding back to me, say, oh, my constituents say this, my constituents say that, and yet the real call has to come in, we have to do this in order to become a stable budget for the state of Alaska and for long term. That's my quandary. I talk to people and they go, I don't want to pay this, I don't want to pay that. And on the Kenai Peninsula front, I think we do need to look at the senior exemption. Unless things that impact somebody individually, if they don't have students in school, they're not just into paying taxes there. If they don't pay taxes in one other area, they don't want to pay it, unless it impacts them. Now, if the borough raises the mill rate, that's going to be an impact. I know here in Soldovia, I'm on council here, where we have a short because of revenue sharing. We're looking at a big hit. Small community like this, it makes a big difference. We have to raise our mill rate in order to make this budget work. So I guess my quandary is, how do we communicate to others that this is the hard road we need to hit? And I am fully in support of an income tax, or we're calling it the broad base. I'm fully in support of that. And how do we communicate that? All of the residents or non-residents that work here don't pay revenue to our state and help us out on the resources they make, they're living on. We need to attack that. We need to take care of that. It just is physically sound. So I guess my quandary is, help us communicate this information to the rest of the Alaskans who figure they don't need to pay anything in order to get their services. Cut services? Is that what we need to do until they yell and scream and figure it out? And I really appreciate this time that you've taken. I wish more people would call in. And I hope, Representative Seaton, that you are getting testimonies written in on the good work you're doing, and also support and questions about the budget. And I also want to say the budget is so complicated that most people don't listen to everything, all the bits and pieces, and that's a problem. But unless you do something that's going to make an impact to the budget, then we're just going to roll around on this project and no one's going to pay anything if they don't have to. Thank you for your time.
Well, and thank you, Vivian. I appreciate that. And, of course, we've got a whole lot of presentations and the summaries and charts that were the presentations we had last year on what's going to happen to the economy of the state of Alaska if we don't get a sustainable fiscal plan and actually start being able to get enough revenue to pay the bills on an annual basis instead of just taking money out of savings, and also the impact on the different groups. I mean, most people really don't realize that an income tax is less burdensome on middle-income folks than a sales tax that raises the same amount of money.
And I guess that's the problem, is that that information, somehow people aren't getting it. So I don't know, because you do a fabulous job. I mean, go on the website, and it is laid out, but not everybody goes there. So I don't know if putting it in the Homer News or putting it in, and maybe it is already, I don't get Homer News, put it in there saying, here's the bullet, folks. Here's the bullet of what it really looks like. I don't know. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine, and I really appreciate you talking to folks and letting them know that, you know, I mean, most people that you talk to that were back here before the 80s when we were paying an income tax, I mean, I remember paying the income tax, and it was really no big thing. Everybody just knew that we needed to have the services that we wanted, and we weren't getting more than we wanted, and I don't think we are now. I mean, we want our roads paved. We want the airports cleared so that the planes can land on time, and we want the courts to be able to function. But I don't know how people haven't gotten the idea when all of a sudden you see that large stretches of Seward Highway don't have any state troopers patrolling them on a regular basis,
right.
and the highways are deteriorating. You know, I'm very pleased that over the last number of years we were able to get a lot of the road work done on the Kenai Peninsula, because I think unless we get there, it's going to be a long time before we get the rest of the work done, unless we do get a sustainable fiscal plan. You know, it's got to be comprehensive and balanced and get us out of this idea that we want to have. I mean, it's kind of, people don't realize if you were spending more money in your household every year than you were taking in, it would not be a good situation to just be taking second mortgages. And that's basically what we're looking at, is spending money out of our savings and depleting our savings. So appreciate you getting that message around the best you can. I hope that what you do is you call your senator and other senators you may know and get a commitment from them, not just inform them of what your opinion is, but ask them specifically for a commitment to support a broad-based tax that makes sense.
And Representative Seaton, I wanted, while we're on the subject, is there an estimate of how much money that's being paid out in income that's leaving the state to be taxed in other states?
Yeah, it's about $80 million. Somewhere between $80 and $100 million would come from non-residents, and most of all of that is being paid to other states now by non-residents.
Right. The workers are paying that money. They're just not paying it to the state of Alaska where they are earning it, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm going to switch over to Kelly Cooper for just a moment. We had quite a meeting here with Mike Navarre a couple of weeks ago over the property tax formula, the new one. So the mill rate is a formula by which taxes are determined?
That's right. The mill rate is a percentage that you add to the assessed values to determine what your revenue is for that. And I just want to step back for a moment on the state's broad-based income tax. There are many that say do a sales tax. I oppose the state sales tax, because the sales tax is really how your smaller municipalities fund their government. So if we continue to increase that, then that makes it difficult for us as we try to figure out our revenues. I support the income tax. I think that as the information that's been shown at the state showing how the reduction of the permanent fund versus an income tax changes things, I think the income tax makes the most sense. And, you know, when you trickle down with the borough having a 3% sales tax, and then you go into the communities like Homer and their sales tax, that's how we create our revenue to fund all the services that people expect. So, and I'd also like to see us be able to do the broad-based tax for education. That takes some pressure off. You know, we could see some more capital projects, which trickles down to our local economy. You know, the funding of capital projects for our schools, our roads, you know, our facilities, that all helps the local economy as well, because that revenue is staying in the community, you know, from the people that are able to work on those projects. So I really do support the broad-based tax. For our borough's budget with the tax assessments, you know, our sales tax is expected to be down somewhat from last year, and we're expecting it to come up a little bit this year, which will help. The property tax assessment, you know, we had over 700 appeals to property tax assessments. And at our last borough meeting, I believe there were over 200 that had already been resolved from the informal process and haven't gone to the Board of Equalization. And I think another 200 expected to be completed prior to the Board of Equalization meetings in June. We are doing what we can to bring that body down here to have those hearings to be a benefit to Homer. But just know that that modeling formula that the mayor was speaking to a couple of weeks ago and that the assessors use, that's information that's provided from, you know, the International Assessors Association. So there aren't any creative funding happening. It is not the mayor saying, this is what our budget needs to be, this is how I need you to get here. They are mandated by their own industry on how they have to assess properties, and we have to be at full market value.
What's the timeline for everyone in the borough being subject to that new formula?
Well, we've got a couple of areas that have the that are being assessed at it now, and we get to each community, you know, about once every 5 or 6 years. Parts of that formula are already being assessed in the entire borough, but some of the new values that they did for the formula will are only in this area. And then next year you'll see that happening in Anchor Point, Nanelchik, Kenai, some areas. So within 5 years, everyone will be on that value, but we are mandated at a state statute level, so we can't say, oops, we don't like this, we're going to throw this out. We have all of these deadlines that we have to meet, and it's done at the state level statutorily on what we can and cannot do. So we had about a 10% increase in the Homer area for property tax assessments, but borough-wide, it was a 3% increase. So we're right in that area, and I do know it was a hard hit for many.
And on the line is Zen. Zen, are you there?
I am here. This is Zen Kelly, school district board member for District 9. And I just wanted to say to Paul and Kelly, I really appreciate both of you taking on the leadership roles that you have and tirelessly advocating for public education. I wanted to kind of throw out there the fact that the school district, we have been searching for efficiencies, putting them in place, restructuring our health care plan, and trying to stem the tide of our increasing costs every year. When we get funded at a flat funded level from the previous year, it is a cut to our budget. So we're constantly having to make reductions and, again, find efficiencies. On the borough level, Kelly, it was a little disheartening to see that the mayor had proposed a small increase that would have allowed us to secure some of the positions we had coming into next budget year and have that voted down. My question to you is, what is the best way for people to advocate to the assembly the importance of education funding?
Thank you, Zen, and thanks for calling in. So the best way for people to advocate is to send testimony with specific examples of how that flat funding from last year, which does equate to a cut, how that affects the daily operations of the school. And then they also need to attend these public hearings that we're doing for the budget. So they, the new assemblies, we had three assembly members appointed midterm, so they're coming up to speed. It's a very steep learning curve, and I know their intentions are all good, but to have people in that building telling them how this affects their daily operations of the school, and the school board should also provide testimony at our public hearing meetings on what that looks like for your daily operations and what you've cut and what are potential options if this continues this way. Because that amendment that was brought for the flat funding, which is equates to a cut, was a 5-4 vote. So we have to convert a couple of people over to get that amendment removed and back up to the funding.
I want to jump in and say the public hearings for the borough are scheduled for May 16th and June 6th. Where can, on the borough website, can people take a look at work that's been going on and proposals and...
That's right. The borough website has a assembly page, and so they can go to that and they can look at the budget. On the main page, they can look at what the assembly's been doing, what amendments have been proposed. And really, the big amendment that's been proposed is that flat funding for the school district and that mill rate being increased from 4.5% to 5%. But we have lots of work. These next two meetings are where we go line by line and start making adjustments.
We've come to the end of the hour. Almost. Representative Paul Seaton, is there a last word for you to have?
Yeah, if people want to stay informed, I do a weekly email newsletter. It comes out each Monday and goes into detail. People can get that by email, and they can just call the officer and Homer at 235-2921, and that number follows us wherever we go. So people can just ask to be added to the email list, or they can just send us an email. And we'll get them that to let them know all the information. And I appreciate everybody listening today and all the communications we get each week. So thanks so much, and thanks for having us on.
And one more question for you. The public testimony on the constitutional amendment for permanent fund dividends and use of PFD earnings is on Friday. And is it still at 1:30 in the afternoon?
Well, that'll be the start of the presentation. I'm sure we're not going to have enough time for all of the public testimony at that time, but you know, we'll get a presentation on it, what it means, how it would work, whether you know that would be good for the state budget, and all those kind of things. So we'll hear all of the presentations and invited testimony first, and then we'll take public testimony as we have time after that.
Okay, thank you, Representative Paul Seaton, and good luck out there in Juneau. Are you headed to the floor today?
Yes, we are. Yep, we'll be going there in about a half hour here. So thanks so much, and enjoy the spring, everybody.
Thank
I
you
wish
so
we
much.
Were home.
We'll see you soon, we hope. And Borough President Kelly Cooper, do you have any final thoughts to share?
Thanks for having me today, and I would just encourage our community. We have a great community about sending information, and our constituents that can't make it up the road, they can send testimony via email through a link on our website, or they can send it to us individually. But it's really important that they continue to stay involved. We want to hear you, your input, your ideas for solutions really help. If you have questions on where you think we should make changes, don't hesitate to call your representative and we can discuss that. But it's really important that you stay involved. We understand how difficult the economy is. And I would like to personally thank Representative Seaton for his courage this year to take on this funding issue and the budget issue with the state, because it has certainly not been a popular one, but we can't continue to spend that down, and it does trickle down to us. So thank you, Representative Seaton, and your entire office for that work that you're doing to make it sustainable going forward, and that's our goal at the borough as well.
Well, thank you, Borough President Kelly Cooper, and thanks to Representative Paul Seaton as well. You have been listening to The Coffee Table. Right here on KBBI AM 890 Homer. The slightly edited version of The Coffee Table will be on our website, kbbi.org, this evening. And I want to thank everyone for calling, and this has been The Coffee Table. I'm Kathleen Gustafson.